Hi, this is Mrs. English. I will be reading to you from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad. The Lattimore translation of Homer's Iliad, and I'm reading today from Book 12. Book 12. In this book, the Greeks have temporarily lost three of their major heroes, and they are now on the defensive. The Trojans attack the wall that the Greeks built back in Book 7. Hector will smash the wall or the gate open with a big rock, and they are getting very close to the ships, and so we're working up to a climax here. And of course, the Trojan walls, if you haven't looked those up yet, are the walls built for Laomedon, Priam's father. The Trojan walls are very important in this story also. Looking at line one. So within the shelter, the warlike son of Menoetus tended stricken Eurypylus, and meanwhile the Argives and Trojans fought on in massed battle. Nor was the Danaan's ditch going to hold them back, nor the wide wall above it they had built for the sake of their ships, and driven a deep ditch about it, and had not given to the gods grand sacrifices, so that it might guard their running ships and their masses of spoil within it. It had been built in despite of the immortal gods, and therefore it was not to stand firm for a long time. In lines 7 through 9, Homer is foreshadowing the ruin of the wall. He tells us in line 6, they had not given to the gods grand sacrifices, so that their wall might be guarded. Line 10, so long as Hector was still alive and Achilles was angry, so long as the citadel of Lord Priam was a city untaken, for this time the great wall of the Achaeans stood firm. But afterwards, when all the bravest among the Trojans had died in the fighting, and many of the Argives had been beaten down, and some left, when in the 10th year the city of Priam was taken, and the Argives gone in their ships to the beloved land of their fathers, then at last Poseidon and Apollo took counsel to wreck the wall, letting loose the strength of rivers upon it, all the rivers that run to the sea from the mountains of Ida, Rhesus and Heptarparus, Caressus and Rhodius, Granicus, Isippus, and immortal Scamandrus, and Simoeus, where much ox-hide armor and helmets were tumbled in the river mud, and many of the race of the half-god mortals. Phoebus Apollo turned the mouths of these waters together, and 9 days long threw the flood against the wall, and Zeus rained incessantly to break the wall faster and wash it seaward, and the shaker of the earth himself, holding in his hands the trident, guarded them, and hurled into the waves all the bastions, strengthening of logs and stones the toiling Achaeans had set in position, and made all smooth again by the hard-running passage of Hela. This is the Hellespont, line 30. And once again piled the great beach under sand, having wrecked the wall and turned the rivers again to make their way down the same channel where before they had run the bright stream of their water. Thus afterwards Poseidon and Apollo were minded to put things in place, but at this time battle and clamor were blazing about the strong-founded wall, and the bastion timbers were thundering as they were struck, as the Argives, broken under Zeus's lashing, were crowded back on their hollow ships, and struggled to get clear in dread of Hector, the strong one who drove men to thoughts of panic. But Hector, as he had before, fought on like a whirlwind, line 40. As when a pack of hounds and huntsmen assembled a wild boar or lion turns at bay in the strength of his fury, and the men, closing themselves into a wall about him, stand up to face him and cast at him with the volleying spears thrown from their hands, and in spite of this the proud heart feels not terror, nor turns to run, and it is his own courage that kills him. And again he turns on them, trying to break the massed men, and wherever he charges, the masses of men break away in front of him. Such was Hector, as he went through the battle and rallied his companions, and drove them on to cross over the ditch. But now the fast-footed horses, line 50, balked at the edge of the lip, and dared not cross, whinnying loud, since the ditch in its great width frightened them from it, but not easy for them to overleap nor to walk through, since along the whole length the jut of the overhangs stood on both sides, and the surface of the floor was thick set with pointed palisades, which the sons of the Achaeans had paled there, dense and huge, so as to hold off the range of attackers. And a horse straining at the strong-wheeled chariot might not easily enter there, but the dismounted were strong in their effort. And now Polydamas stood beside bold Hector and spoke to him. Line 60. Hector, and other lords of the Trojans and companions in battle, we are senseless trying to drive our fast-footed horses over this ditch. It is hard indeed to cross, and sharp stakes are planted inside it, and across from these the wall of the Achaeans. There is no way to get down, no way again to do battle from horses, for the passage is narrow, and I think they must be hurt there. For now, if Zeus, who thunders on high, an evil intention toward these is destroying them utterly, sending aid to the Trojans, this is the way I would wish it. May it happen immediately that the Achaeans, the Greeks, be destroyed, here forgotten and far from Argos, from Greece. But if they turn again, and a back rush comes on us out of the ships, and we're driven against the deep ditch, then I think no longer could one man carry a message, get clear of the city once the Achaeans have turned back upon us. Line 75. Come then, do as I say, let us all be persuaded. Let us tell our henchmen to check our horses here by the ditch, then let ourselves, all of us dismounted and armed in our war gear, follow Hector in mass formation. So his advice is that they leave the horses on the Trojan side of the ditch. As for the Achaeans, they will not hold if the bonds of death are fastened upon them. Line 80. So spoke Polydamas, and this counsel of safety pleased Hector. And at once in all his armor he leapt to the ground from his chariot, and the rest of the Trojans assembled, not mounted behind their horses, but all sprang to the ground, when they saw brilliant Hector had done it. Then each man gave orders to his own charioteer to check the horses in good order at the edge of the ditch, and the fighters formed apart into groups, then, closing together into five well-ordered battalions, followed their leaders. So they're checking into five battalions. They who went with Hector and Polydamas, the blameless, these were the most numerous and bravest, and beyond others, furious to smash the wall and fight their way among the hollow ships. Line 90. And Cebriones went with them as third man, while by the chariots Hector had left another man, not so good as Cebriones. Paris, Alexander, led the next group with Alcathous and Agenor, and Helenus with godlike Deiphobes led the third group. Now Helenus and Deiphobes are sons of Priam. 95. Sons both of Priam, and Asius was with them as third man. Asius, son of Hyrtacus, whom his tall shining horses had carried over from Arisbe and beside the river Celeius. The leader of the fourth group was the strong son of Anchises, Aeneas, and with him were the two sons of Antenor, Archelochus and Acamas, both skilled in all fighting. Sarpedon led the far-renowned companions in battle, and had chosen to go with him Glaucus and warlike Asteropaeus, since these seemed to him to be marked out as the bravest of the rest after himself, but among all he was preeminent. Now when these had closed their wrought ox-hide shields together, they charged straight for the Danaans, the Greeks, eagerly, with no thought longer of being held, but rather to hurl themselves on the black ships. Then the rest of the Trojans and renowned companions in battle were willing to follow the order of blameless Polydamas. Only Asius, Hyrtacus's son, lord of men, was unwilling to leave his horses there and a charioteer to attend them, but kept them with him, and so drove on the fast-running vessels. So one chariot goes through. Poor fool, who by the ships in the pride of his horses and chariot was not destined to evade the evil spirits of destruction, nor ever to make his way back again to windy Ilium, Troy. Line 115. Before this, the dark-named destiny had shrouded about him through the spear of Idomeneus, proud son of Deucalion. Idomeneus is the son of Deucalion, who is the son of the Cretan king Minos. For he sent his horses to the left of the ships, where the Achaeans were streaming back from the level ground with horses and chariots, and this way he drove his chariot and horses, and found there the leaves not yet pushed home in the gates, nor the long door bar, but men were holding them wide apart, on the chance of rescuing some one of their companions running for the ships from the battle. Of a purpose, he steered his horses straight there, and his men followed, screaming aloud, since they thought the Achaeans no longer would hold, but that they would be driven back on their dark ships. Fools, since in the gates they found two men of the bravest, high-hearted sons of the spear-fighting Lapithai, one the son of Peritheus, powerful Polypoetes, and one Leontius, a man like the murderous god of battles. And, of course, the murderous god of battles would be Ares. This tribe of Lapiths in the Lapi in line 128 are, they're only mentioned here, and then they're also mentioned in book 12, 181, so a few lines from here. But they will mention the battle of the Lapiths and the Centaurs. That was mentioned in book 1. That was at 262 to 72. Very interesting. The high-hearted sons of the spear-fighting Lapithai, the Lapiths, and one Leontius, a man like the murderous god of battles, line 130. Now these two, who had taken their place in front of the high gates, stood there like two oaks who rear their crests in the mountains, and through day upon day stand up to the wind and the rain beat, since their great roots reach far and are gripped in the ground. So these two, in the confidence of their strength and their hands' work, stood up to tall Asius, advancing upon them, nor gave way. But these, holding up high the tanned leather of their shields, moved straight in on the strong-built wall, with enormous clamor around Asius their lord, and Iamenus, and Orestes, and Asius' son Adamas, and Oinomaos, and Theun. And this time the Lapithai, the Lapiths, still inside the wall, were striving to stir up the strong-grieved Achaeans, Greeks, to defend the vessels. But among the Danaans, when they saw the Trojans sweeping on against the wall, a clamor arose, and they gave way. Line 145. And the two, bursting through the gates, fought on in front of them. They were in the likeness of two wild boars, who in the mountains await a rabble of men and dogs advancing upon them, and as they go tearing slantwise and rip the timber about them to pieces at the stalk, the grinding scream of their teeth sounds high, until some man hits them with his throw and takes the life from them. Such was the grinding scream from the bright bronze covering their chests, struck hard on by spears, for they fought a very strong battle in the confidence of their own strength and the people above them. These flung about them with great stones torn from the strong-founded bastions, line 155, as they fought in defense of themselves, and the shelters and the fast-running vessels, so that the flung stones dropped to the ground like snowflakes which the winds blast, whirling the shadowy clouds drifts in their abundance along the prospering earth. So the missiles flung from the hands of Achaeans and Trojans also went showering, and the helms and shields, massive in the middle, crashed hollow underneath the impact of rocks like millstones. And now Asios, Hyrcatacus's son, groaned aloud and beat on both thighs with his hands and spoke aloud in his agony, "Zeus, father, now even you are made utterly a lover of deception," line 165, "for I never thought the fighting Achaeans would be able to hold our strength and our hands invincible, but they, as wasps, quick bending in the middle," another simile, "or as bees will make their homes at the side of the rocky way, and will not abandon the hollow house they have made, but stand up to men who come to destroy them, and fight for the sake of their children, so these, though they are only two, are unwilling to give back from the gates, until they've killed their men, or are taken." He spoke, but by such talk did not persuade the heart of Zeus, whose desire it was to extend the glory to Hector. And now at the various gates, various men fought each other. "It were too much toil for me, as if I were a god, to tell all this, for all about the stone wall the inhuman strength of the fire was rising, and the Argives fought unhappily, yet they must fight on to defend their ships, and all the gods who were helpers of the Danaans in the fighting were dejected in spirit." All the gods helping the Greeks were depressed. Line 180. "But the Lapithai fought on and closed in the hateful fighting, and there the son of Peritheus, powerful Polypoetes, struck Damasus with the spear through the bronze-sided helmet, and the brazen helmet could not hold, but the bronze spearhead, driven on through, smashed the bone apart and the inward brain was all spattered forth. So he beat him down in his fury. Then he went on to kill Pylon and Orminus. Meanwhile, Leontius, the Scion of Ares, struck down Antimachus's son, Hippomachus, with a spear cast into the war belt, and afterwards, drawing his short sword out of the scabbard, made a rush through the crowding men and struck from close up. Line 191. Antiphates first, so that he crashed on his back to the ground, then beat down along the Proserpine earth, Menon and Orestes and Iamantes, all beaten down in rapid succession. And now, as these were stripping their men of their shining armor, line 195, the fighting men, following with Polydamas and Hector, who were the most numerous and bravest and beyond others furious to smash the wall and set fire to the vessels, these still were divided in doubt as they stood there at the ditch's edge. As they were urgent to cross, a bird sign had appeared to them. So this is more bird signs, line 200. An eagle, flying high and holding to the left of the people, and carrying in its talons a gigantic snake, blood-colored, alive, still, and breathing. It had not forgotten its warcraft yet, for riding back it struck the eagle that held it by chest and neck, so that the eagle let it drop groundward in pain of the bite, and dashed it down in the midst of the battle, and itself, screaming high, winged away down the wind's blast. So this bird sign is that an eagle brings a snake and drops it in their midst. And the Trojans shivered with fear as they looked on the lids, a snake lying in their midst, a portent of Zeus of the Aegis. And now Polydamas, line 210, stood beside bold Hector and spoke to him. Hector, somehow in assembly you move ever against me, though I speak excellently, since indeed there is no good reason for you in your skill to argue wrong, neither in the councils nor in the fighting, and ever to be upholding your own cause. So Polydamas interprets this eagle and snake rather poorly. Line 215. And now once more I will speak out the way it seems best to me. Let us not go on and fight the Danaans by their ships. I think it will end as the portent was accomplished. If the bird sign that came to the Trojans as we were trying to cross was a true one, an eagle flying high and holding to the left of the people, and carrying in its talons a gigantic snake, blood-colored, alive, but let it drop suddenly before winning his own home, and could not finish carrying it back to give to his children. So here's how he's interpreting the bird. The bird couldn't carry it all the way to its own nest to feed to the little eaglets. So we, even though in our great strength we break the gates and the wall of the Achaeans, and the Achaeans give way before us, we shall not take the same ways back from the ships in good order, since we shall leave many Trojans behind us, whom the Achaeans will cut down with the bronze as they fight for themselves by their vessels. So an interpreter of the gods would answer, one who knew in his mind the truth of portents, and whom the people believed in. Looking darkly at him, tall Hector of the shining helm answered, Polydamas, these things that you argue please me no longer. Your mind knows how to contrive a saying better than this one. But if in all seriousness this is your true argument, then it is the very gods who ruined the brain within you, and you who are telling me to forget the counsels of thunderous Zeus, in which he himself nodded his head to me and assented, but you tell me to put my trust in birds, who spread wide their wings. I care nothing for these, I think nothing of them, nor whether they go by on our right against dawn and sunrise, or go by to the left against the gloomy mist and the darkness. No, let us put our trust in the counsel of great Zeus, he who is lord over all mortal men and all the immortals. One bird sign is best, to fight in defense of our country. Why are you so afraid of war and hostility? Line 245. Even though all the rest of us were to be cut down around you among the Argive ships, you would run no danger of dying, since your heart is not enduring in battle, nor of fighters. But if you shrink away from the murderous work, or turn back some other man from the fighting, beguiling him with your arguments, at once beaten down under my spear, you will lose your own life. So Hector's telling him his prophecies stink. He spoke, and led the way, and the rest of them came on after him with unearthly clamor. And over them Zeus, who delights in the thunder, drove down from among the hills of Ida the blast of a windstorm which swept the dust straight across the ships. He was mazing the minds of the Achaeans and giving glory to the Trojans and Hector, line 255, and they, in the confidence of the portents shown, and their own strength, worked to break down the great wall of the Achaeans. So the Trojans believe that the gods and the bird signs, everything is for them. They tore at the projections on the outworks, and broke down the battlements, and shook with levers the jut of the buttresses the Achaeans had stuck in the earth on the outer face to shore their defenses. Line 260. They tore at these, in hope of breaking down the Achaeans' wall. But now the Danaans did not give way in front of them, but they, fencing the battlements with the hides of oxen, hurled from the wall at the enemy, who came on beneath it. The two Iontes, so Telamonian Ajax and the Ajax the Lesser, walking up and down the length of the ramparts, urged the men on, stirring up the warcraft of the Achaeans, and stung them along, using kind words to one, to another hard ones, whenever they saw a man hang back from the fighting. Dear friends, you who are preeminent among the Argives, the Greeks, you who are of middle estate, you who are of low account, since all of us are not alike in battle, this is work for all now, and you yourselves can see it. Now let no man let himself be turned back upon the ships for the sound of their blustering, but keep forever forward, calling out courage to each other. So may Olympian Zeus, who grips the thunderbolt, grant us a way to the city when we beat off the attack of our enemies. Line 276. Such was their far cry, and they stirred the Achaeans' war strength. And they, and what was it like? As storms of snow descend to the ground incessant on a winter day, when Zeus of the councils, showing before men what shafts he possesses, brings on a snowstorm and stills the wind asleep in the solid drift, enshrouding the peaks that tower among the mountains and the shoulders outjutting, and the lowlands with their grasses and the prospering work of men's hands, and the drift falls along the gray sea, the harbors and beaches, and the surf that breaks against it is stilled, and all things elsewhere it shrouds from above, with the burden of Zeus's rain heavy upon it. Okay, just remember that. So numerous and incessant were the stones volleying from both sides, some thrown on Trojans, others flung against the Achaeans, by Trojans, so the whole length of the wall thundered beneath them. Line 290. And not even then might the Trojans and glorious Hector have broken in the gates of the rampart and the long door bar, had not Zeus of the councils driven his own son, Sarpedon, among the Argives, like a lion among horn-curved cattle. Presently he held before him the perfect circle of his shield, a lovely thing of beaten bronze, which the bronze smith hammered out for him, and on the inward side had stitched oxhides in close folds, with golden staples clean round the circle. Holding this shield in front of him, and shaking two spears, he went onward like some hill-kept lion, who for some time had gone lacking meat, and the proud heart is urgent upon him to get inside of a close steading and go for the sheep flocks. And even though he finds herdsmen in that place who are watching about their sheep flocks, armed with spears and with dogs, even though he has no thought of being driven from the steading without some attack made. Line 305, and either makes his spring and seizes a sheep, or else himself is hit in the first attack by a spear from a swift hand thrown. So now his spirit drove on godlark Sarpedon to make a rush at the wall and break apart the battlements. And now he spoke in address to Glaucus, son of Hippolochus. Glaucus, and this is Sarpedon speaking, line 310, why is it you and I are honored before others with pride of place, the choice meats and the filled wine cups in Lycia, and all men look on us as if we were immortals, and we are appointed a great piece of land by the banks of Xanthus, good land, orchard and vineyard and plough land for the planting of wheat. Therefore it is our duty in the forefront of the Lycians to take our stand and bear our part of the blazing of battle, so that a man of the close-armored Lycians may say of us, indeed, these are no ignoble men who are lords of Lycia, these kings of ours, who feed upon the fat sheep appointed and drink the exquisite sweet wine, since indeed there is strength of valor in them, since they fight in the forefront of the Lycians. So Sarpedon says to Glaucus, they need to have excellence. They need to show excellence in battle because it's going to reflect on all the Lycians. Man, supposing you and I escaping this battle, and this is Sarpedon speaking to his friend Glaucus, supposing you and I escaping this battle would be able to live on forever, ageless, immortal. So neither would I myself go on fighting in the foremost, nor would I urge you into the fighting where men win glory. But now, seeing that the spirits of death stand close about us in their thousands, no man can turn aside nor escape them. Let us go on and win glory for ourselves, or yield it to others, and literally we will give glory to others. In other words, for Sarpedon and Glaucus, if they were immortal, they wouldn't need to win Kleos, to win glory, just to perpetuate their glory after their deaths. For them, because they will die, their Kleos provides them with kind of a surrogate immortality. This is the only way they can be immortal. Their glory can be immortal. So they're going off line 3-2-8 to win glory for themselves or give glory to others. He spoke, nor did Glaucus disobey him, nor turn aside from him. They, leading the great horde of the Lycians, advanced straight onward, line 330. And the son of Peteus, Menestheus, shivered as he saw them, since they came against his bastion and carried disaster upon it. He scanned the rampart of the Achaeans in the hope of seeing some great chief who could beat back the bane from his company. The Glaucus and Sarpedon, the Trojans, are going straight toward the son of Peteus, Menestheus, and he's looking for a rampart of the Achaeans, hoping some Greek will come and beat back this bane, Sarpedon and Glaucus, from his company, line 334. And he saw the two Iontes, Telamonian Iontes and Iontes the Lesser, insatiate of battle, standing on the wall, and Teucrus, even now coming up from the shelter and close by, that he was not able to cry out and make them hear, so great was the clamor about him as the shouts hit skyward, as shields were battled with missiles and the helmets crested with horsehair, and the gates, which had all been slammed shut, and the Trojans, standing against them, were trying to break them down and force their way in. This is quite the wall. At once he set Thetis off as a runner to Aias. Go on the run, brilliant Thetis, and call Aias here. Or better, both Iontes, since that would be far the best thing that could happen, since here headlong destruction is building against us. Line 345. Such is the weight of the Lycian lords upon us, who even before now have shown as deadly men in the strong encounters. But if in their place also hard work and fury have arisen, at least let powerful Telamonian Aias come by himself, and let Teucros follow with him, with his craft in the bow's use. Line 350. He spoke, nor did the herald disobey when he heard him, but went on the run along the wall of the bronze-armored Achaeans, and came and stood by the two Iontes, and spoke to them straight out. Iontes, leaders of the bronze-armored Argives, Menestheus, beloved son of Peteus, engendered of Zeus, desires you to go where he is and meet the danger, if only for a little, both of you for choice, since that would be far the best thing that could happen, since their headlong destruction is building against him. Such is the weight of the Lycian lords upon him, who even before now have shown as deadly men in the strong encounters. That was line 360. But if in this place also hard fighting and fury have arisen, at least let powerful Telamonian Aias come by himself, and let Teucrus follow with him, with his craft in the bow's use. He spoke, and huge Telamonian Aias did not disobey him. Line 365. But at once called out in winged words to Aias, the son of Oileus, Aias, now you too, yourself and strong Lycomedes, must stand your ground and urge on the Danaans to fight strongly. I am going over there to meet the attack, and afterwards I will come back soon, when I've beaten them back from the others. So speaking, Telamonian Aias went away, and with him went Teucrus, his brother by the same father. This is, Teucrus is the illegitimate son of Telamon. And following them was Pandion, who carried the curved bow for Teucrus. They kept inside the wall as they went, till they came to the bastion of the high-hearted Menestheus, and found men who were hard pressed there, for the strong lords and men of the council among the Lycians came on against the battlements like a darkening storm wind, and they charged forward to fight with these, and the clamor rose high. First to kill his man was Telamonian Aias. It was Sarpedon's companion in arms, high-hearted Epicles, 9380, whom he struck with a great jagged stone that lay at the inside of the wall, huge on top of the battlements. A man could not easily hold it, not even if he were very strong, in both hands, of men such as men are now. But he, of course, he heaving it high through it, and smashed in the four-sheeted helm, four sheets of bronze, and pounded to pieces the bones of the head inside it, so that Epicles dropped like a diver from the high bastion, and the life left his bones. And Teucrus, with an arrow, struck the strong son of Hippolochus, Glaucus, as he was swarming aloft the wall's high bastion, where he saw the arm was bare of defense and stayed his warcraft. Line 390. He sprang down from the wall secretly, for fear some Achaean, some Greek, might see that he had been hit and vaunt with high words over him. Sarpedon, as soon as he was aware that Glaucus had gone back, was downcast. Nevertheless, he did not forget his warcraft, but striking with his spear at Alcmaeon, the son of Thestor, stabbed him, then wrenched the spear out, and there he, following the spear, fell on his face, and the elaborate armor with bronze clashed about him. And Sarpedon, grabbing in both ponderous hands the battlements, pulled, and the whole thing came away in his hands, and the rampart was stripped defenseless above. He had opened a pathway for many. Aias and Teucrus aimed at him together, and Teucrus hit him with an arrow in the shining belt that encircled his chest to hold the man-covering shield. But Zeus brushed the death spirits from his son, and would not let him be killed there beside the ship's sterns. And Aias, plunging upon him, stabbed at the shield, but the spearhead did not pass clean through. Still he pounded him back in his fury, line 405, so that he gave back a little space from the battlement, and yet not utterly gave way, since his heart was still hopeful of winning glory. He whirled about and called aloud to the godlike Lycians, "Lycians, why do you thus let go of your furious valor? It is a hard thing for me, strong as I am, to break down this wall single-handed and open a path to the vessels. Come on with me, then. This work is better if many do it." So he spoke, and they, awed at the reproach of their leader, put on the pressure of more weight around their lord of the councils, line 415. And on the other side, the Argives stiffened their battalions inside the wall, and a huge fight developed between the two sides, for neither could the powerful Lycians break in the rampart of the Danaans and so open a path through to the vessels, nor had the Danaan spearmen strength to push back the Lycians from the rampart once they had won a place close under it, line 420. But as two men, what was it like? All right, because the Greeks are on one side, the Trojans are the other. But as two men with measuring ropes in their hands fight bitterly about a boundary line at the meeting place of two cornfields, so it's kind of a tug of war, and the two of them fight in the straight place over the rights of division, so the battlements held these armies apart, and across them they hewed at each other in the ox-hide shields, strong circled, guarding men's chests, and at the fluttering straps of the guard skins. Many were torn in their white flesh by the bronze without pity, wherever one of the fighters, turning aside, lay bare his back, and many were struck with the spear, carried clean through the shield. Everywhere the battlements and bastions were awash, line 430, with men's fresh blood from both sides, Achaean and Trojan, but even so they could not drive panic among the Achaeans, but held evenly as the scales. How did they hold evenly? As the scales which a careful widow holds, taking it by the balance beam, and weighs her wool evenly at either end, working to win a pitiful wage for her children, so the battles fought by both sides were pulled fast and even, until that time when Zeus gave the greater glory to Hector, Priam's son, who was first to break into the wall of the Achaeans, for he lifted his voice and called in a piercing cry to the Trojans, line 440, "Rise up, Trojans, breakers of horses, and wreck the ramparts of the Argives, Greeks, and let loose the inhuman fire on their vessels." So he spoke, driving them on, and they all gave ear to him and steered him against the wall in a pack, and at once gripping still, their edged spears caught and swarmed up the wall's projections. Meanwhile, Hector snatched up a stone that stood before the gates and carried it along. It was blunt-massed at the base, but the upper edge was sharp. Two men, the best in all the community, could not easily hoist it up from the ground to a wagon, of men such as men are now. But he alone lifted and shook it, as the son of devious devising Cronos made it light for him. As, what was it like? For Hector, snatching up this stone, line 451. As when a shepherd easily carries the fleece of a wether, picking it up with one hand, and little is the burden weighing him, So Hector, lifting the stone, carried it straight for the door leaves, which filled the gateway ponderously, close fitted together. Line 455. These were high and twofold, and double door bars on the inside, overlapping each other, closed it, and a single pin bolt secured them. He came and stood very close, and taking a strong wide stance, threw at the middle, leaning into the throw, that the cast might not lack force, and smashed the hinges at either side, and the stone crashed ponderously in, and the gates groaned deep, and the door bars could not hold. But the leaves were smashed to a wreckage of splinters under the stone's impact. Then glorious Hector burst in with dark face like sudden night, but he shone with the ghastly glitter of bronze that girded his skin, and carried two spears in his hands, line 465. No one could have stood up against him and stopped him, except the gods, when he burst in the gates and his eyes flashed fire. Whirling, he called out across the battle to the Trojans to climb over the wall, and they obeyed his urgency. Immediately some swarmed over the wall, while others swept in through the wrought gateways, and the Danaans, the Greeks, scattered in terror among their hollow ships, and clamor incessant rose up. Here we have the end of book 12, with the Trojans getting ever closer to the Greek ships.